Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 11th of January. And I'm recording at 10:35 p.m. and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook. But first, let's have a quick review of what's happened this week. I mean, stock markets have really been quietly steady. They are somewhat overbought, as I've been saying in pretty much every one of these audios. Wall Street is near its historic resistance, which I've also talked about. And the strongest stock markets are overextended relative to their rising 200-day moving averages. And therefore, we could see stock markets stay in these ranges for the most part, for at minimum, I would say, several weeks. Now, that will cause sentiment to be a little bit unsettled here. And the factors to watch for, technically, really, are first, bearish indications would be downward dynamics. We've seen very little of that so far, although China did have a downward dynamic today because of the increase in its inflation rate due mainly to food price inflation because of a cold period they've been experiencing. Another factor to keep an eye out for would be breaks in the sequence of rising lows that you see on these charts. Particularly if that happens for some of the big indices, that would really be quite significant. And we've mentioned those levels on the S&P index, or I've mentioned them quite frequently. And we have that reaction low that occurred at the end of the year, which is right around the 1400 level for the S&P. There's also a closer level near 1450. And then there's that quite important low down just below the 1340 area. Now, among bull points that we would look for and are likely to see in some instances would be narrow orderly consolidations, and then particularly if those narrow the overextensions relative to the rising MAs by some of the stronger stock markets, and then are followed by upward dynamics, either within those ranges or preferably, or more likely, I should say, is following additional breakouts to the upside, since we're talking really about at least several weeks. News developments inevitably will be a factor in terms of what actually takes place here. But while stock markets are high and there are concerns, well, it's because of the good year that they had last year and the good start that they have seen this year. And while there are some legitimate concerns over where the actual earnings are going to come from, I wouldn't be too pessimistic on that front because the world's really getting better. In terms of Europe is not the threat that it has been as in people's minds, certainly during last year. And what a interesting story to have in Asia, where some markets did extremely well last year, but to have the two biggest markets in Asia, China and Japan, of course, to have them take off with Japan in mid-November and China in early December and see such powerful rallies, breaking downtrends and clearing a number of previous highs. That's very, very positive development. And if those two markets remain generally in form, and I think that's one of the more likely possibilities for much of the year, and then that will be extremely good for the rest of Asia overall. Now, I should also mention China's influence on Asia. China really is the key here for a number of other markets, not least not and not exclusively limited to Asia. For instance, if China is strong, as I say, I think that's a good sign for Asia. Although Japan has a different story, and we're very dependent on how Shinzo Abe's program progresses. I think he's doing all the right things here so far. Obviously, there are concerns about debts in Japan. How could there not be? But China does own most of its own government debt, which is a little bit reassuring. China has needed the weaker yen, and that's really going to breathe renewed life into a lot of Japanese companies. I think we're already seeing that, and this is important. I've stressed that plenty, and I will continue to do so, as I think as long as it looks interesting. Now, what I would say though is that, having mentioned yesterday, I believe in the audio, that people who wanted to take the fullest advantage of Japan's move would have not only long positions, but they would also be short the yen. But I think it's very important, if you're short the yen, given the run that that's actually having, and how often do we see major currencies experience such a big move? Well, it's a relatively rare occurrence to see, or at least to see it this quickly. So anybody who's running with yen shorts needs a trailing stop. And you can really base that. If you look at JPY, now JPY will show the dollar rising against the Japanese yen. But that's the chart that you're most familiar with. And of course, the dollar rising, the dollar is not that strong a currency overall. Yet it's powering ahead against the Japanese yen. And I think there have been three similar sized setbacks during this run. And so the depth of those, plus just a little bit more as the measure of a trailing stop, or the distance of a trailing stop, would make sense, in my opinion, every time these currencies surge, or like the dollar surges upwards against the yen, you move your stop up on the basis of that slightly larger reaction. Because when you finally get the end of the run, for at least the medium term, we will clearly see some bigger reactions than the three orderly pauses, three very similar, I should say, pauses that have occurred so far. And that's very much a hallmark of a very powerful, consistent trend. And when it loses its consistency, I think you will want to stand aside. Now, as for China, the inflation issue in terms of food prices is going to be an important factor. We will have to assess this. I don't know whether this is enough to interrupt China's move to the upside at this time. Might depend a little bit on how the government actually responds to these developments. But what we have to remember is that China has an authoritarian government, and what they fear most, or certainly one of the things that they fear most in domestic terms, are food shortages or soaring food prices, because that obviously hurts the poorer masses. Those people get angry and frustrated. And we have often seen over the decades food riots in Japan. Now, the governments live in fear of that because, with a rigid political system, a dictatorship, there are fewer natural outlets or I should say, safety valves to offset some of those pressures. So it'll be interesting to see how the government actually plays it. In other words, they will certainly have to import some food. That'll be good for countries such as New Zealand or any other large producer of food. Some of the African countries, some of the South American countries are in that category. So that needs to be watched. And in terms of the chart action here overall, we had that downward dynamic. If that's not going to represent too much of a change in overall momentum, it'll be interesting to see what next week provides. But for instance, if China's market can steady, in other words, not extend that downward dynamic, then we could say that we've moved into this more ranging phase, the slower, more ranging phase of the advance that I've talked about previously and also in yesterday's audio. Because when you get these explosive moves to the upside, they usually form in, you know, over two different phases. The first and biggest part of the move will occur very rapidly and dramatically, as we've been seeing with both Japan and also China. China until today's downward dynamic. That often gives way. First, it's not creating a bubble because they're both coming off lows, but the initial move eventually slows down as more people are tempted to take profits and the number of people chasing the market on the upside is diminished somewhat. And so we tend to get more of a ranging, slightly longer ranging, slightly bigger ranges, staircase upward trend. As long as you tend to get these ranges one above the other, then that will still be consistent. And those often persist for longer than the initial move to the upside, but because the gains, because there's a lot of backing and filling going on, the gains will be somewhat less overall. And then finally, it all sort of rolls over and you start to get some more big downward dynamics and you go into a medium-term correction at least. So I mention all that just because those are certainly some of the important technical factors to keep an eye out for. Now, overall, I repeat that I like what I've seen of this new Chinese government so far. Well, that's mainly referring to Xi Jinping. And China could use some really inspired leadership here right now, and let's hope we get it. We will see. Now, if China next week extends the overall decline, then I would assume that people are clearly more concerned about the inflation factor, and it could go into a medium-term correction sooner rather than later. Now think of the European stock markets and the way they looked. You had explosive moves to the upside, and then they went into, I think, about 3-month trading range. That's what I would envisage with with China. But if it holds most of the gains, and by that I mean excuse me, approximately 3/4 of the gains overall, that would be quite good. And you'd probably see some upper dynamics within that range. Watch also the bank shares. Is if they lead, that's an important indication. And then you get that overall upside move actually continuing. I think that's likely to be the case, that we will get some very good additional gains from China this year. And the only thing I think that could interrupt that would be if they had really serious inflation problems. And I think that's probably unlikely. They've got plenty of liquidity in that economy, and they can import food, and hopefully we don't see too much additional crop damage taking place there. Now, Europe. Europe is excuse me, a little bit of tickling in the throat. Europe is still very much in form while the banks lead, and I really would focus on that banking sector. Now, I don't mean in terms of your long positions necessarily, because there are lots of other good companies. They're mainly the good companies in Europe are not banks, and many of the good companies also have quite high yields. I'm talking now about many of the multinational companies within Europe, particularly some of the food manufacturers and distributors. So keep a but keep an eye on the banks in terms of leadership, because as long as Europe's banks are performing, and the index for that, incidentally, is SX7E, and SX7E. I've posted it on a number of occasions, and I would focus on the bank index rather than individual banks within within Europe. It'd be too many to watch, and choose the index. But when that bank's index starts to roll over eventually, whether in just a corrective phase, or whether you temporary corrective phase, or whether you see some big downward dynamics, that's a time to start turning cautious on what Europe does for at least the short term. Now, the U.S. Will be fortunate if it can match Asia this year in terms of overall stock market performance. I don't think it will. And the main reason for that is the politics. And they're clumsy. President Obama undoubtedly has many qualities, but as a manager of the economy, well, I don't think that's one of them. I also feel that the political struggle that led to the fiscal cliff, and we're going to get back to that in February, another version of that over the debt ceiling. I think this is likely to really prey on investors' nerves, and also at the back of my mind is the fact that the United States will probably be the first of these big economies to abandon quantitative easing. Therefore, don't be surprised, and I've said this before, but don't be surprised if the United States underperforms somewhat. Now, if you have a strong Asia and a strong Europe, it'll be underperforming but still moving to the upside. The U.S. would still be able to move to the upside. And I think there's a good chance that we will actually see that later this year. And the problems that I've mentioned, this political problems, I think are probably not as significant as the long-term advantages that the United States has. For instance, the most dramatic one that we've seen last year and even longer and are seeing this year is the energy, competitive energy advantage. And this is very unusual, and it's due entirely to the fracking technology, which has enabled the United States to greatly increase its energy production. So that is attracting a good many companies back, or causing them to repatriate some of the posts that they had exported around the world, because energy costs, particularly for some of the bigger manufacturing companies, make a huge difference, and that's a very, very attractive advantage overall. Now, looking way, way ahead, as well, maybe not all that far ahead, but as the quality and variety of the robotics industry continues to improve, and I think it'll be improving on an exponential basis. That will make the United States a little bit more competitive overall, because the biggest problem that we've seen within the United States has been wages. That's improved somewhat as wages have come up in China very rapidly, for instance, and that's likely to continue, while the unions have had to take a different tune in this new globalization world, and cut back on a lot of their demands. Still, there's also the issue of the training or the skill sets that workers actually have. So you can just imagine what an improvement it can be when you get sufficient robots that can take over a bigger and bigger chunk of the business activities for many of these companies. And that's a very long-term trend that I've talked about before, and it's one that's going to run, well, potentially for as long as we have it, for the really the, for the indefinite future. Let's put it that way. Now, what about bonds? Let's move on to bonds. I really maintain that in the countries where we see all the QE, that this is creating a huge bubble in those government bond markets. And the evidence of that is in the 31 years of falling yields. And even more dramatic evidence is in the spiraling debt that we actually see in those same countries. And then, of course, we have the historically low yields, and they have firmed recently. Now, with the QE still going on, there's a good possibility that central banks will be able to cap those rising yields. And they will certainly want to do that, because really the QE is occurring because they want to keep currencies down. They want to keep in lots of money in the system. They want to support these economies, support their industries, support the job creation. And because their debt is increasing so much, the last thing they want is for the cost of servicing that debt to suddenly explode. So chances are that we'll see this QE continuing for some time, but what will certainly bring it to an end, I believe, will be when economies are stronger. That may take more time, but we're heading in the right direction. And perhaps particularly the United States, of the highly indebted countries. So that, I think, is a bad story for bonds. The duration, though, or the how much time bondholders actually have before this really becomes a serious worry, is the is the big unanswerable question. We'll just have to watch and wait and see. But I would be wary. I've been wary for quite a while. I make no apologies for that because I think stock markets are still more attractive, and it's a hazardous game being in the last stages of an increasing bubble. It's also quite profitable, but the dangers are obviously rising at an alarming rate overall. Now, once these bubbles clearly break, clearly start to burst, and watch that U.S. Total return chart. Merrill Lynch produces that chart. It is in the library. I posted it on a number of occasions, and you will see that the U.S. Treasury total return chart is has lost lost momentum. It hasn't come back all that much. It's still at a quite a high level overall. But when we see downtrends that are bigger than some of the reactions that have occurred over the last 5 years, I would assume that the bubble has at least started to burst, and that will cause a number of additional problems. but we can worry more about those when that actually happens. Now, I think in the U.S. is where we might see the change first. Europe, well, I think will Europe see sufficient growth to really burst a bond bubble? I think that'll probably take much longer than for the United States. It's potentially more of a Japan-type situation, although hopefully with a little bit better better monetary governance. We'll see. We will see overall. But I think these people who are heavily invested in the government bonds at this stage are undertaking an increasing risk overall. And I've said that before, and of course, as long as they're still seeing those portfolios appreciate, albeit more slowly, or they're not seeing any big drawdowns, they think that the warning is unnecessary or outright wrong. But that's always the case with bubbles, and people see what they want to see and often get caught out. I would just emphasize the point and be very careful in those in those government bond markets. And once they do show signs of clear signs of peaking, and that would include, as I mentioned a moment ago, bigger downward reactions by the bond futures charts, and certainly by that total return for the U.S. 10-year treasuries, then it will be an extremely dangerous environment overall. But that's some point in the future, I believe. Now, currencies, the most interesting story, of course, is the Japanese yen. I've already covered that in terms of if you're long Japan, and that's been a good idea, and then if you want to maximize the opportunity, you have short yen positions, preferably against some of the higher yielding currencies, so you get the interest rate differential as well. But you do want that trailing stop, as I emphasized earlier on in this audio. The U.S. dollar's appeal is mainly as a safe haven, And if we have confidence building here at in these global stock markets, then, and we've certainly seen some of that, then the safe haven U.S. dollar is less appealing. And I would think of it as in inverted commas here overall. I much prefer the Asian and the Asian currencies generally. And I'm not a big fan of the dollar, but we're probably going to see some reasonable sort of stability in terms of just a lot of ranging activity overall. And I think that might well continue. I certainly hope it continues, although that's by the by. If it does continue, that's one less thing to actually worry about overall. But those higher yielding currencies that we see, and really for countries that do not have these overwhelming debt burdens, and those are the currencies that are likely to perform more often than not. And moving on to commodities, interesting. Food prices. Food prices, a lot of these agricultural commodities have been moving downwards. I put up a chart of that either yesterday or on Wednesday. But if China is going to have to start importing a lot of food, that could change the situation here somewhat. We'll have to watch on that. And the weather will obviously be a hugely variable factor. And we need to see some reasonably accommodative circumstances. We've been getting that in South America in terms of their grain crop, but we would need to see that also take place within the United States. And that's the one that concerns me the most, because we've had a clear rise in the overall temperature there, and I've won't talk about that anymore because I've put up a chart of that that will demonstrate that in an article. You can read about it, but you've also seen some of the emails that have come in from people in the U.S. And there are some risks that I've written about. So basically, unstable or very volatile weather conditions would put upward pressure on food prices, and that would cause problems, as it's already doing in China. So we need a little bit of luck, and that means more stable climatic activity, and a reasonably benign environment in the major food-producing regions. Will we get that? I don't know. Hopefully we actually do. But if we don't, there will be trading opportunities in some of the food commodities to the upside, and those rises, food price rises, will increase inflation. And that will be a concern, and that will feed through to stock markets as well eventually, if we were to see big moves to the upside in terms of food prices. I'm hopeful that prices will remain relatively quiet or even subdued. That would be bullish overall for the global economy. And then and that's in that environment, I certainly would not want to be long. We'd see some of these prices drifting down, and shorts would be the better play. Now, energy also has been very quiet in terms of oil prices. They're not all that cheap, but they're not running to the upside as so many people have feared for so long. As long as we see oil prices ranging, that's a plus for the global economy overall. We will see the spread of the fracking technology. I know there are lots of reservations, political objections, and so on, but people are going to need this energy, and we're moving slowly towards an environment where energy prices will be declining in real terms, and that will occur as the fracking is extended. It might also include more of the nuclear type of energy. There have been some interesting articles that we posted recently on thorium reactors. Then there are the renewables, many of which are too expensive, not least wind power. But solar is beginning to make a significant difference, particularly for the countries with the hottest temperature, or really it's the least rainfall. So where you've got a lot of sunlight, solar is a major factor now. So you can see where at one stage we were entirely dependent on oil and coal. The demand for coal is declining. It's a big polluter. And also, the demand for oil is slowing overall, whereas people assumed that it was going to rise in perpetuity. And that's never been my view, and it's not borne out by all the developments that we're actually seeing. So I've often said that we're in the second relatively difficult decade of tight oil supplies, but the faster some of these technologies, such as the fracking, spread, the better. The faster the scientific community is able to improve the renewables technology, the better off we'll be in terms of our overall global energy costs. Are we beyond the stage, I ask, where there's a serious risk that we get another major recession as a consequence of spiraling oil prices? Well, we're not out of that danger zone yet, but the danger has been lowered. The risk has been lowered, and we will move, I think, increasingly away from that risk over the next few years. And something really very bad indeed would have to occur in the Middle East, and there's been plenty of turmoil in there over the last year and more, and still we do see these oil prices leveling out overall. So in terms of the long-term outlook overall, I'm reasonably optimistic regarding energy prices, and I maintain that view that I've held for a number of years, that in the next generation we will actually see falling energy prices in real terms. That means adjusted for inflation. And so I hope this is not too long an audio for you, but the Friday audios are supposed to be longer, but we've had a good look around the globe overall, so it's now just time for me to say all the very best to all of you. Have a terrific weekend.